This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Weekend Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete, and I'm with the King Ebola, Tim. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Yeah, King Ebola. I'm going to only one of the shows. Got friends in town. A lot of people coming in. Tom Batista from Military Industrial Suplex is going to be in town. A good friend of mine, Chris from Vegas, is coming in. And wrestler Daniel Makabe, who's popular on 3-2-1 Battle, getting some buzz from certain people for having some really good matches with Thatcher, Negro Navarro recently. He'll be hanging out this weekend too, so I'm excited to hang out with some friends, check out some wrestling. Another announcement for a replacement, pretty last minute here, pulling out Chris Brooks. Kind of a bummer for me. I was excited to see Chris Brooks live, even if I wasn't, you know, necessarily thinking his match was going to be fantastic. It would have been good. He's with Trevor Lee, so of course he'll have a good match. Replaced by Marco Stunt. Last minute replacement. To face Trevor Lee, which is obviously a good opponent for him to have a fantastic match with. So that's going to be really interesting to see now how that match turns out.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of... and it's really so. I mean, it just seems like ever since the SCI feature show, the guy's been on a roll where it's just like... He's getting bigger and bigger, like becoming a more of a household name each and every day, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the guy, he's all over the place already. People are, like, clearly getting behind him, getting a lot of buzz. Maybe too quick, but who's to say?
Yeah, that's what I'm a little scared about, a little too soon, but you know what? You can't pass up the booking, so, I mean, it's not like, you know, I don't blame him. I just hope he hones his craft still, keeps on working on that instead of, you know, buying into all the hype in a way.
Yeah, no, exactly. And this
it seems a grounded kid, though, but I mean, yeah, but still.
Yeah, this is a good setting, like I said. I think Trevor Lee in PWG can have a good match with him for sure. So, you know, I don't think he's going to get exposed, but we'll see where he goes from here. I mean, this could be the start of him becoming a Ebola regular, which could be very interesting. Definitely a guy who I think ends up in the comedy 10-man tag, as I was kind of went over that recently on the Torch deep dive with Rich Fan. We're kind of talking about the tag team action that happens in Ebola. And I was actually talking about how this year it really felt like a lot of the guys who would probably end up in that match are not comedy guys per se and not necessarily going to deliver in big, like in a comedy setting. But I think that Stunt is a guy who they'll play around with his size to make some kind of jokes. Obviously, so that's there now, probably going to end up being a big part of that match too. So he could come out of this weekend with his stock risen even higher. You know, it's very, very likely.
Very what?
It's very likely that he'll come out of this looking even better and being even more popular.
Yeah, I mean, that's very fair. I mean, but I mean, it's almost like how can he get even more popular at this point?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that this could be, like I said, I think that the Trevor match is the chance, I think, to show, maybe to show some doubters, because there are some people who are already starting to say, like, that it's, you know, like we were saying, maybe too much too quick, people are kind of turning him into a meme, he's not actually that good, but I think that he'll have a really good match with Trevor, and I think that that could shut some of that down, you know?
You think some of the rest will start giving some backlash? Because, you know, a lot of these guys work years to start working Bola, and here's Marco coming right in off of, you know, All In and this SCI exposure along with other stuff, you know?
Yeah, and you mentioned that and I thought of it. I want to give some credit to Dylan for being a little bit humble in a way that I really appreciated. He was on the PWP newscast and talking about the... the star-making skills of GCW when it came to Marco Stunt. And he really didn't try to take credit for it. And I'll give him some credit that's due. He didn't try to say, you know, SCI actually made him a star or anything like that. He just was talking about GCW. you know, made him seem like a bigger star. And I respect Dylan for that, but I also think he does deserve credit because no one knew who Marco was until, you know, SUP and SCI were using him.
Yeah. They should get a big it's one of those pieces of history that's almost maybe 4 years from now, 5 years from now, will be fucking forgotten, you know? You'll just remember the Joey Janela All Night Show or whatever, and then the All In, and then Bola, and I mean Ben, and then SCI will just be a blurb in it type of thing, where not realizing the full scope, and that the that audience, that hardcore audience, embracing Marco, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but yeah, don't get me wrong. The guy has worked his ass off. Nice kid. All I can say is that my interactions with him was a super nice kid, and he wants it, and he feels comfortable in the skin. He understands who he is and what he can be, and so it's cool to see him getting his shots and stuff. It's just so weird though. That, I mean, when I was really the Bola one. I got into. I could see. I understood it. I understood the Janela thing, but yeah, the Bola thing was a little like, whoa, that's cool. But Bola has always been a little bit more protected than that, you know.
Definitely, but I think this year especially, I think it stands out that they're booking people that would not be on the Bola radar. Like I think PCO. Is kind of in the same level as Stunt when it comes to that, where you wouldn't have expected him to be in Bola. And so when they came out hot and announced him as the, you know, the first entrance, I think that they were showing that they're in a different place than where they have been in the past in a lot of ways.
Speaking of PCO, does it seem like he's getting some backlash now on online too?
Definitely is. I mean, I think people might say that I'm one of the people giving him some backlash, honestly, because just kind of some of the stuff that I recently was saying about him on the Torch when we're talking about the PWG build. But what's funny is I kind of said that, and then now I've been watching, and some of the places I've seen, I just did a podcast last night recorded with a couple of people, and we're talking about the Nick Gage Invitational Tournament, and PCO had a non-tournament match on the show, and I think he's finding a better role for him, where I think that the punching bag kind of thing with Walter and that kind of becoming the popularity kind of turned into like what he was doing for a bit, taking that around, but this kind of Frankenstein monster thing that plays off of what I talk about, his stiffness and his kind of, you know, ability to not really move as smoothly, actually to me seems like it's working better in a lot of ways. So yeah, there's definitely some backlash, but I think that backlash was just that, like, something hit, the Walter match kind of caught the zeitgeist and people were into it, and then he just kept trying to recreate that formula and it wasn't working, and I think that that was what was kind of becoming annoying. But now I think he's found something that works better for him overall as kind of his gimmick, if you will, for this current run on the indies. Some stuff does definitely need to get toned down. Like we talked about it in the match that he just had in Black Label Pro that was a bit over the top with the Destructo or whatever the his doctor guy's name is. But otherwise,
Destro.
I think Destro, he's having better matches because of kind of what he's doing, the role that he's playing in the matches, and the way that he's presenting himself, where it's he's actually getting better. But then at the same time, it's not the same freak show, and it's not going to stand out, and he's not necessarily having like what I would put in the realm of match of the year contender stuff, but it's just more, for me, it's more enjoyable, but it's not like, it doesn't hit that next level. So yeah, I think that's like kind of the backlash on him, honestly.
I mean, even though he might not be having these match of the year contender, I think that's kind of like, you know, sounds kind of elitist if you ask me. The guy is 50 something, and to expect him to be able to—I marvel at what he's able to do night in and night out. If anything, that's getting old is doing some of the over the top gimmicky, you know, some of the vignettes he does on YouTube and stuff. When I first heard about it, I'm like, yeah, I can understand people getting a little like, okay, we've seen this, done it. We've seen that bag of tricks already. But when it comes to his matches, I mean, I feel the guy works hard. He understands pretty good psychology. He understands what he's doing. So I don't quite understand that. I don't think he's doing anything more or less offensive than any worker trying to get over. So to me, I don't understand it. And if you're not in love with his work, that's fine. I mean, that's fair game and stuff. But I still think he connects with most of the people in that audience.
Right. And like I said, I think that the backlash comes for a lot of people comes from feeling a repetitive nature to what he was doing. And I think that, again, when you talk about being unfair, it's like that's unfair because people didn't write him off and then stop paying attention. And I think within, you know, the past month and a half, he's like developed quite a bit more of what he's doing to where it does have a built-in match structures and narratives beyond just the repetitive nature of like, check out this freak show that he's going to take all this abuse and do all these wild spots, which did get over initially and did get pops from people initially. Which I totally understand why people were into that. But then, yeah, like I said, the backlash then comes when people say, like you said, been there, done that. We've seen this already. He keeps doing the same stuff. And I think it's unfair because if you're not paying attention, that's why I said I'm actually starting to enjoy him more, even though in some ways I kind of started circling the wagons with the PCO negative talk to start out. I kind of now regret that in some ways because he has shown adaptability and wanting to grow and change and do something else and not just rest on his laurels and punch his meal ticket doing the same thing, because he's obviously a pretty smart worker. You talk about being able to work, very smart worker, in that he knows that that's going to get old. So he didn't wait too long and let it get stale to the point where everyone turned on him. So, I do think that at this point, some of that backlash is unwarranted in a lot of ways. But again, I think also part of the backlash comes, and this is something that's becoming more and more, it's not just wrestling fandom, but it's in general our culture, is that more and more people dislike PCO because they're actually backlashing against the PCO fandom. And their issue is more with the people who go over the top about loving PCO than they are really having an issue with PCO himself.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, it seems like there's not a whole lot going on in wrestling right now. There's a little bit of stuff percolating, but you know, nothing really major, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, news and craziness going around in the background. Yeah, there's not much going on. Just, you know, wrestling. There's actually some good wrestling and interesting stuff going on. That's about it.
Well, hey, let's start it off with MLW Fusion episode 21. Next week, it looks like we'll be reviewing War Games MLW 22, episode 22, Fusion. This one opens up with Freddie Yehi versus Holiday. What'd you think of this?
The match itself was fine for what it was. It's just kind of a TV match, nothing over the top. But the takeaway for me coming out of it was that Yehi now even less like feels coherently part of the team Filthy, coming out in, you know, his gear that's just like doesn't match with what anybody else in the group wears. He's got the kind of ratty looking tank top on that kind of, it's not as clean. Like the whole Team Filthy vibe, even though it's Team Filthy, is kind of more professionally presented track suits. They look like, you know, the UFC athletes and that whole thing. So it's just weird to me. He comes out here and he sticks out like a sore thumb is the way that you're supposed to say that. And like doesn't seem to fit in with the group. The work is good. I liked that he did he's doing some of his signature stuff that's like not zany, but you know, eccentric, as they say, like the bicycle kicks up kind of stuff like that. But then also toning stuff back with just more of that bruising style. Like I've been picking up on him doing a lot more this year. That's been really good. It was a good way to present him, but it's like, again, it felt like building someone who, we talked about it over and over again, but for me, right, to me, Fred is a guy who, rather than building him this way where you're presenting him in squash matches, he's a guy who's TV champion style. We talked about it with like John Gresham in ROH and stuff. A guy who is going to get over more from having longer competitive matchups instead of doing squash matches just because of how talented he is. So yeah, just feels like a lot about what they're doing with Fred Yeheim doesn't make sense, and then it's really glaring when we compare it to the match that he's going to have later on when we review Action. Like, the guy could be used so much better and is being used so much better in so many other places. MLW just does not serve him well at this point.
Fair enough. I'm liking it. But yeah, it was pretty much kind of like a squash and stuff. We get the recap of the Hart Foundation with Sullivan. You know, again, this is an angle that's not working for me. And then we see Pillman Jr. having a glass of wine with breakfast. What do you think of all this?
This was terrible. I mean, I did
terrible, not... and it feels like it's the ripping off his dad and not letting him be his own man. So many things wrong with this.
Yeah, the wine at the table with the robe open and just everything that he's doing, it does not work. He does not work in this role. This is sad. This is sad for me to watch, honestly. I am not into them using him this way. And especially with the way that Pillman's life went, there's something a little bit grim about showing him with the glass of wine at the table like that with the robe and just kind of the decadence that led to, I mean, didn't directly lead. I mean, honestly, it kind of did. Like, this lifestyle that they're portraying him in led to his father's death. You know, it's just, it's sad to reference that. So all these kids, this whole family left as orphans and they're using it to try to get his son over in some way. I don't know how this is supposed to get him over, really.
No, I don't get it either. It's I mean, this is the character he ended up doing because he was physically shot. So this is like his last desperation character. I mean, his WCW character is a lot different. It was a pure baby face. And what we're seeing now, it's just it really is kind of sad. Then we get a little homicide video, you know, Indrajana introducing him. What did you think of that?
It was fine. That was done fine. And I get where they're coming from, but it does, to me, it doesn't work the way that they're trying to reference the history of MLW in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I get what they're doing, but it feels like two totally different companies. It's two totally different eras. And it's kind of referencing back to, like, the fact that you went out of business, which doesn't make me feel like you're super sturdy as a company. Like, why do I trust that you're going to not just go out of business again, you know?
I'm sorry, where were we at?
We're just talking about the homicide vignette video.
Okay, and that leads us into Homicide versus PCO. You know, this is fun, but it kind of lacked the big-time vibe a lot of the PCO matches had. It kind of just was there, and both of them have a rep in a way, and they have an aura about them. I've never been a homicide, buying into the homicide aura, so I've very, very rarely have seen him, viewed him. I was never was in a Ring of Honor fan when he first broke in there. But yeah, this match just didn't really do a lot for me. It just was kind of there. What were your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I'm with you. This is a match that should have been built to more, especially with the history and the background that both guys have. Right now, this shouldn't be a match that's just thrown out there like this.
Yeah, they're using Homicide as the lay down for him, and I get that. But at least make the win seem more than just, you know, afterthought setting up PCO versus Park as the big match. He should have had a big win like this, but not, I don't know. They just needed a little bit more spark, and I don't think the MLW understood what they were doing here.
No, and Homicide, I mean, it's so funny they show the background of Homicide stuff in here. Like, you're supposed to buy into this idea that he's, you know, an MLW original and all this. But, like, Homicide's a guy who very clearly has different gears. And I'm not going to say, like, he phones it in, but this was not premium Homicide. The guy can be fucking great, and he can work really hard, not just physically, but also mentally. But he could also check out, and especially a lot of guys who had that kind of shitty TNA run in the, like, worst of the worst periods of TNA all kind of learned how to just cash checks, you know? And if he's in a setting where he's not being super featured and his match doesn't have stakes. A lot of times it's just whatever, but we saw him, it was definitely in Nova, where like the storyline stuff that he's doing, and because like his matches had stakes and he was really committed and into what he was doing, and it's just, this is just whatever. I also thought it was weird. PCO comes out with this giant gnarly cut on his chest and he's showing it off to the crowd before the match, and I didn't really get what that was.
It's like a Frankenstein reference, because they did the car battery and they try to cut him open type of thing. So yeah, okay. It's going back to Frankenstein being happy, not a complete man.
Okay, so that's all just playing off of that stuff. Okay.
Yeah. And playing off his YouTube vignettes.
Yeah, because I don't really watch a lot of his. I haven't watched really any of his videos, and I probably should.
I watched the first few, but then after that, it's just like, okay, we get it. You do freaky things.
Yeah, it's definitely playing to a certain market. But yeah, this match should have been built to. This should have been a big time matchup between these two guys instead of just thrown out here on TV.
Agreed. Then we get a recap of Cade and Jimmy Uta. And we get a Cade interview out of this. It was okay. But, you know, Cade, I don't know, he doesn't scream top guy to me at all. And at best, he just seems like a person and stuff. So I don't get it. What about you?
Yeah. Cade doesn't do anything, and this feud didn't do anything, because I talked about it with the blow-off match. It just too much. It was left on the back burner too long, and it lost any heat that it possibly could have had to really feel like anything coming out of it. They could do something going forward, but it's weird that he does this interview solo. They should have had Gideon there with him just to remind you of kind of the situation now with his muscle, but he just wasn't there. I didn't understand why they wouldn't have shown him there.
Agreed. And then we get a big Fury Road road build. This is fine. Because, War Games is over with, so we're not getting that build anymore. This worked. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird that the way that their timing and their filming schedule and everything goes, because it's like, we haven't watched the War Games yet, but they're already moving on, you know? And this is part of, like, it's similar to what I'm just talking about with the Yuta and Cade feud thing, the way that stuff went on the back burner. They need to work on that kind of stuff, because when you lose track of what's going on, then it's like, by the time I see it, now I'm not going to care about it, you know, because you stopped pushing it on the TV like the week before it aired. I mean, they're still talking about the War Games, and they did do an angle on that, but it does feel like now we're building to the next thing already. Let's, so like...
Yeah, not even have the chance to breathe.
Yeah, and how consequential do I feel like War Games is if you're already moving on to the next thing before I've even seen it yet?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So, yeah. You're kind of like, you're minimizing War Games completely.
Like, the idea of War Games should be that, like, the War Games could change everything. And after that, we might have to just reshuffle the deck completely about what we're doing, because anything wild can happen in that cage. But you're telling me, basically, after that cage, it's still going to be status quo. We're going to the next show, you know? And I don't like that.
Fair enough. And that leads us into the main event. Of Phoenix and Pentagon, the Lucha Brothers, versus Drago and Rey Oris. And my God, Drago's arm or shoulder was completely fucked to the point where it looked like it couldn't even work. Am I right? Or
yeah, I know. And they barely sell it. Like, it's part of the story, but it should have been the focus of the entire match, just with how gnarly it looks.
Yeah, it's amazing. His shoulder's that fucked up. He can't even. He was taking all the bumps on the other side. It's amazing that they were able to work around it as well as they could. I was shocked. It was an okay match. You feel bad because Drago could do absolutely nothing really in it. I mean, he still did some stuff, but he couldn't do anything with the left arm. And that's his money, since he had a. That's what he's now giving it away in a way. That shoulder just looks so bad. I mean, I enjoy the Lucha rules here, and this has tons of big moves with near falls. I didn't do much about it. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I'm with you on most of that, and I think that the Lucha rules helped, like, even though they didn't explicitly say it, I thought commentary did a pretty good job on this, actually, and I can't remember if Stryker was on commentary here or not.
Stryker was, but he was almost kind of making it like, they never really announced it was Lucha Rules. They just end up doing it, and we just go with it. I hate that type of fucking commentary part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that I don't like that either, but I think that he was at least trying, kind of pointing out, like, these guys are all luchadors, they're going to have that, the referee's going to use the discretion to allow it. And I thought that it was probably best for the setting, because with Drago's fucked up shoulder, probably having really, really tight structure to the match would have been difficult for him, because being able to just ditch to the floor after spots and then have Horace take over, I think, helped with the transitions being a lot smoother for that.
That's a very good point, Tim. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, so you know, and I thought Horace did a good job picking up the slack in a lot of ways, and really keeping up with the match. And commentary, again, I thought Stryker did a good job really making the points of the differences between the styles and the kind of, like, who's got what going for them in the match. So he actually was pretty good here. It's like, you know, this is it, because he's got the background from talking about these guys in Lucha Underground, but it's not Lucha Underground setting where it's so fucking ridiculous that it actually, his commentary is decent. It almost reminds me of early Stryker in WWE as a commentator when he was actually pretty good, you know?
I can buy that.
But the match itself was, I mean, it's nothing special, but it's also, it's funny to say that because it just, it's so much incredible stuff, you know, the spots and the athleticism, but it was just, it becomes repetitive. Again, we keep talking about that repetitiveness is like kind of the killer. It doesn't matter how fucking good you are. If your stuff starts to feel repetitive, I think it just naturally, people just, it loses the shine. So it's just, it's kind of a bummer in that regard, but it was fine. It was good. It's interesting to see where they're going. I almost thought that there was a chance they were going to put the titles on Horace and Drago here, just to, you know, kind of switch over to a different pairing of luchadors with the Lucha Brothers probably going out, but they keep the titles and cut a promo afterwards, and just wonder where they're going, because people are really talking about them going to WWE, and even the post-match promo here felt like almost a goodbye promo, you know? So
it did, you know, they still have the belts.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like they keep doing goodbye promos everywhere, but they keep winning and keeping titles and stuff, so who knows what's going on?
Yeah. I think they'll get over. I think they'll get over in the WWE. I really do. Unbelievably naive to think that?
No, I think that they can easily get over in the WWE. I think the only problem they could have is if Rey is showing up and all they do is stick them all together with the three of them.
Yeah.
That would be the worst thing I could think of, really. But as a tag team, they can work. And I think the cool thing about them is that as a luchador tag team, they can still actually mix it up with the heavyweights, though, especially in modern WWE. So, like, right, they'll be able to not just be pigeonholed as, like, cruiserweight tag team luchadors, which I think is something I don't know that WWE has ever had heavyweight luchadors, like, in general, and especially as a tag team. I don't think that's something that they've ever done before. So I think that could definitely get over as something kind of new and unique to them.
Cool. Yeah, overall, though, I didn't like this show. I thought it was flat all across. And the main event was okay, but all I could think about was Drago's shoulder, because it was so apparent. Like, it was like his arm was done. And yeah, nothing really screamed out at me that I there's definitely a easy miss show, if you will. I mean, I don't think there was show was all anything. It felt like a place setter or a table setter at most. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, again, it's the flow of the way that the episodes are recorded and when they go. And I'm trying to think of, like, the real timeline. I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, okay, was this actually recorded at the same day that they're doing the War Games, or is it separate? When was it? It's just so much of it is confusing, and I think it's why a lot of wrestling companies just like to do live, or as close to live TV and stuff as they can, because it helps keep from that stuff getting confusing. And the biggest glaring thing with MLW is that literally no one is used at the peak of their ability in MLW. Like, I can't think of anybody who I feel like is being presented, booked, and, like, you know, like, whatever, kind of in the best possible light in the MLW.
Yeah, like, there's no one on that roster that's better off working from MLW.
Yes, it's just, it's glaring. So it does make every episode a miss, sometimes hard to watch, you know, and like at the best it's like novel. There'll be like at the best there'll be something that happens on an episode of MLW that you kind of go like, oh, that was interesting, but not a lot of stuff ever that's like great.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. On that note, why don't we take a breather, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some NXT. How's that, brother?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. We're back with NXT. Not only we're back, we're back with Larkin and Birch are returning here. It's good to see Larkin back. But man, I was expecting a little bit of a bigger reaction for the guys, to tell you the truth. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I would have expected the people to care a lot more about the return there of the Oney Larkin and Birch. But you know, I mean, their last big match was it the Undisputed Era match that was really good on the TakeOver show. Was the last match that they had, I think. And that was really fucking good, and the crowd went crazy for them and
yeah,
really bought into them, but they had to win that crowd over. You know, they weren't just over when they came out. So when you're in that place, it's like you got to strike where the iron's hot, and unfortunately the iron cooled down because of the injury there. I like the presentation of the new Brazilian tag team, Brazilian top team, if you will.
Yeah.
With Benoni and I don't know the other guy's name, unfortunately.
Neither do I left it blank.
But I did like their presentation, and I was interested to see them being used this way. But again, this is NXT's like thing. I'm like, these guys shouldn't be repackaged to come out and job this way. Like, but you know, that's
what's the point of repackaging them if you're going to job them, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like just don't do that first. Like, just do the job first, then prepackage them when you're ready to have them start winning. But I guess it's how it works. I guess, you know, maybe it's a sign of the future, like the idea that they don't want to have anyone come across like Roman Reigns, over pushed, shoved down our throat, right? So they have to have you get used to them as losers first is the new psychology of how wrestling works, I guess.
That's terrible. I mean, that's just awful. But hey, that's what happens when there's only one winner left standing, big time wise. So hopefully All In 2 will happen sooner than later. Then we got a Ciampa promo. He has music, but fuck, this was long. It felt very Raw-esque in a way, very Raw, WWE Raw to me. And that's not a good thing for me. What you make of it, brother?
Yeah, same feeling. Bummer that he's got music, honestly, and that he even references it. That was my way of telling you to shut the fuck up or whatever he had to say there, and it's just, the music didn't scream that to me. If there was something in the music that, you know, that made sense, that it was some in some way like a message to the fans or whatever, then I could get into it. But it's, you talk about Raw, that's like kind of that WWE feel where they say things that don't really back up into reality in any way. So it's just like, it to me, it just sounds like any other fucking theme music. But he's making a big deal about how it's actually, this theme music is actually a message that I don't like the crowd. And it's like, okay, cool. The promo goes way too long. He's engaging. He's good. And the stuff that he's saying is good. But like, I was saying this last week. I mean, Ciampa's really good. And he overcomes a lot of stuff right now with his promo ability, and just, it's not even just his promo ability. He's always been a pretty good promo, and he realistically hasn't gotten like better as a promo, but it's his character commitment.
But him getting a chance to be the lead guy, you know, the top guy of the promotion.
Right. And I
actually thought the presentation of it was good on what he was saying, but I just thought it was very long and stuff. Maybe it might have been overproduced, you know.
Right, and what it is, or what I'm like trying to say about it, is that like he's got something that overcomes it, but that's only going to last for so long that he's going to keep overcoming these issues that are happening in most of his promos.
Very true. And then we got Shayna Baszler with Violet Payne. I like this segment here, but by God, Violet Payne is the worst babyface name ever. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not super great.
Yeah, either you're expecting her to be a dominatrix or a heel. And she was really neither here. And so you have Baszler who just beats the crap out of her, and I liked it. Sometimes you need to send these girls out to get guzzled by Shayna. And it worked really well here. What about you? What are you thinking?
Yeah, the way that Shayna just destroyed her was fantastic. It was like, I mean, this girl didn't matter, but Shayna made it matter by just how violent she was being, and then repeatedly going back after her and all that. So hopefully she gets a repackage and a new name, or they do something else with this Violet Payne girl. Or, I mean, I don't know if she's even signed to a contract. She might just be whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely right. Then we get heavy machinery with outside talking, but hey, here comes Ciampa. And that sets up a match. Regal gets there, and they kind of tease a match between the two of them, huh?
Yeah, which is interesting. I wonder where they would actually go with that. But I don't know. Maybe just Ciampa singles against Dozovic?
Yeah, it sounds like a television match to me at most.
Yeah. I mean, that could be interesting, and flirting with Dozovic as a more of a single star could be something. I think Ciampa could probably have a pretty good match with him. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Then we get the Undisputed Era segment. I personally thought this was pretty fun and actually had me laughing at times. I thought these guys click together and they're becoming pretty entertaining, honestly. Feels like they're kind of getting like the, I don't want to say the rub or the stench off them, but kind of getting the, they're understanding the entertainment part of the business more and more each time that you see them. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you completely skipped over the Nikki Cross EST little interstitials that they were showing, the stuff between those two. Bianca Belair and Nikki Cross, they're building to something between them. It was nothing, though, so I totally get skipping over it. Undisputed Era, yeah, I mean, their presentation is, I think it's not like getting a stink off to me or like kind of shaking.
Well, because it feels like, you know, they were feeling a lot of like NWO-esque, and they still do, so it's not like they stink as an in-ring or anything, but it just feels, I don't know, they feel off at times.
No, what it is, or what I think it, what I feel is like it comes across like they're fine. They're putting it together for a WWE presentation is kind of what I think where it's coming to, where you talk about the entertainment side of it is a good way to say it. It's they're playing the characters in a way that makes sense for this audience more and is presented better in this audience. And it's not necessarily 100% for me, But, you know, that's also why I don't really watch WWE, because I'm just not, it's the way that stuff is presented is not for me, but it's working really well, and it's an act that clearly will continue to get over and become a big deal for them and for the WWE in general. I think that they can use these guys pretty well moving forward.
I can buy into that, and they're just even more entertaining. I think they're clicking as a group more now, and actually having the belts, the tag belts, really make something. It gives it a little element or a little wrinkle. Lars Sullivan versus Raul Mendoza. I gotta say, I thought this was a fun match, and Sullivan did a great job at points in getting me to believe that Raul Mendoza was going to pull off an upset, which, I mean, that's not a skill they wanted, or it's not a skill they let Sullivan show off much, so it was kind of neat to see it here. What were your thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, the match was really good for, like, Mendoza ragdolling, and Lars being really dynamic on top with his brutality and his violence, and his facials were really good here too, and the way that he was playing to the crowd. His look is also better too, like physically.
Yeah, I thought part of it though was Sullivan, I thought, was giving him some credit offense, some spots where he was teeter-tottering, and it made you believe he had a chance, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that Lars is developing really well, and Mendoza is a great ragdoll, like, jobber for them to have, and he's got some snappy, decent-looking strike, like, quick-paced offense that he can do in spots. So he was really good in his role here, but just a little while ago, I mean, when they started Lars out with the tag team thing, and he's turning on the tag team partners, and it didn't seem focused. It seemed somewhat rudderless, I guess you would say. And then now, and you know, the big knee brace that I had pointed out at the time, like, oh, this guy is just on shaky footing, like literally and figuratively, to start out. But he has really come together. And I think whatever put him out for the little bit there when it seemed like he was heated up, like, you know, we talked about it with Lorcan and Birch, like, those guys were warming up, heated up, injury puts them out, and then they come back, and now it feels like they got to build it back up. But Lars comes out of the gate strong. And like I said, the look, the way he's put together, his body, he's in seemingly in better shape, but not just in better shape, but in a better aesthetic look for his character, it feels like to me, the way that he's really filled out his chest and even his midsection to where he looks more like just this big barrel of a man. The facials, the way that he's like selling some on the back foot, helping to build some credibility in his opponents, not just demolishing this little guy so that it feels like a bigger deal when it's over. Just everything about it. I mean, the guy is really putting it together. I mean, he is. The only thing that's left that's a little shaky is the mic work in it. I think people keep referencing it because it's the character thing. It's that his promos and his mic work are not even just promos, but like his kind of vignettes and videos and stuff. It feels like the character, it's like one foot in one world, or trying to do the like intelligent monster character thing, but they're not really committed to it in a way that feels real. But once he gets that together, I mean, people are talking about Dream being the biggest bankable star for every possible facet of wrestling that you know right now that they have in NXT. But I think if Lars puts that piece together, gets the actual verbal side of things a little bit better, or if, God forbid, they just gave him a fucking manager to talk for him, I think he's a bankable star on the level of Dream, or maybe even more, with just the way that WWE presents big guys like him as more, you know, as top level guys. I actually think he could be a really huge asset for them moving forward.
Yeah, what did you think of the Pete Dunne interview?
It was fine, but it didn't feel like, I don't know, Pete Dunne is not developing really in NXT at all to me, promo wise or anything, and I would expect that would be the thing. I mean, his work is always really good and I've liked his work, but it feels like he's not getting any focus in a way that like is making him a better promo, so I did not really get into it. And then it's kind of the other side of it, as you follow up with Ricochet, I feel like it's the complete opposite. Like, Ricochet is now coming across super good on the mic, and his character stuff is developing fully to where you get him, you understand his character, you buy into him and who he is and everything that's going on there. So it's just, it's really interesting to me.
Yeah. Then we got the Ricochet. The only thing that Dunn has developed a little bit is a baby face. Which, you know, he's still not a very good baby face, and now that's kind of why they've kind of shuffled him back into more in the heel category. Then we get a Ricochet interview, and dude comes across like a star. His promos are getting, he's still not a great promo, but his promos are getting better each and every time he's out there. He looks a lot more comfortable cutting promos now. I thought he was going to be a terrible promo, but he's turning into a decent promo. But he comes across like a star when it comes to presentation. What were you thinking on the great one, Ricochet?
Yeah, like I was saying, the comparison between him and Pete, with them even in the feud, it's like night and day, where Pete doesn't feel like he's growing as a character in a promo, while Ricochet is, I mean, just becoming a really great promo for them. And that was kind of, I always personally thought that he was fine charisma-wise, but he's growing into being able to do what I think that they're going to want him to do here in the WWE.
Yep. Then we get this Forgotten Sons vignette. I want to say this is different. I don't know how I feel about it yet, but I think it might be a little too different. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I have the same feeling. It feels like you're going into heady territory that doesn't necessarily have history of panning out in a wrestling context, because it feels like they're trying to reference kind of the Fractured Country vibe, you know, and like they're almost a step away from like these guys being like, you know, we all have opioid addictions or something, like, you know, they're like pretty close to that. Or so I'm just I'm wondering where it's going to go and how it's going to pan out. And I mean, you know, with I think the economy, America's economy, still relatively shaky, I think trying to do a gimmick that's about the idea of like we're the people who were forgotten by the economy or whatever is kind of weird. And like, you risk that, like, what if things go bad again relatively soon? Like, then what happens with this gimmick?
Yeah, and now here's an angle straight out of the 80s. Dakota Kai and Deonna Purrazzi, they just kind of run into Aaliyah and Lacey Evans, and they have kind of like a little disagreement that's going to lead to a match. You know, there's kind of nothing really going on here. What do you think?
Yeah, and I don't know if I like the presentation that they're doing here. I talked about it with Aaliyah, as I think that she's coming together in a lot of ways with her character stuff. But I don't know if I put her on the heel side with Evans, if that works for me. And then I don't know about Purrazzo as a babyface, really. And maybe I'm wrong and other people have always thought of Purrazzo as a babyface, but to me, I've always thought of her as more of a heel on the indies. So I guess maybe I'm just wrong in that regard and she actually is presented as a babyface. But I think that she's just more of a natural heel. But I mean, she could turn on Kai, I guess. You could go there pretty easily with Dakota Kai being the punching bag as always.
Yeah, of course, and I like Deonna a lot, so I'm interested in seeing where this whole entire thing goes. Then we have Cassius Ohno. He goes into Regal's office, and it looks like they're teasing a heel turn on Cassius, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really seeing it, and then this is playing into my kind of pet fantasy booking with it being involved with Aleister Black. He's coming in there almost to confess for attacking Aleister Black, and when he gets in there, Regal's like, "Oh no, you already have an alibi." He's like, "I have an alibi. You're overlooking me." This is interesting stuff. So I'm into it wherever they're going with Cassius Ohno here, because at least they're doing something with him.
Yeah, they're doing something with him. I'll give him credit, but God, this is segment kind of sucked. I mean, it's not Cassius' strongest suit. His strength is his wrestling, and being a believable promo. This is kind of, oh, shucky. I don't know. I didn't care for the segment. And you know what? I'm all for Ohno doing a heel turn, but God, do we have to do it on the Grassy Knoll segment? Does everything got to be because of this thing? Just shit. And then we got Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair. Huh?
I was going to mention, too, this, like, that I kind of talked about having this weird feeling about Aleister Black as, like, a overpushed champion in NXT to a level that I never really experienced in NXT as far as I was concerned, like, to a point where he was treated like he was a bigger deal than he was and all this. And, like, yeah, when you talk about that, like, now the catalyst for every fucking angle in the company is built around the idea that, like, someone injured this guy, it really does fall into that same territory.
It does. It's yuck.
Yeah. So, getting into this match, Nikki Cross and Bianca Belair. I was not super excited about it coming in. I got Nikki Cross even kind of playing up some of her zany stuff before the match starts.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. In my notes here, I'm like, Nikki Cross has turned into a version of Bugsy McGraw, the female version. And that's not a good thing. She used to be just an ass-stomping, kick-ass, brawling, fighting woman. Now she's taking her shtick over the top, zaniness. It doesn't work for me. Bugsy McGraw never worked for me either. I'm just not digging it at all, I'll tell you that. It's just so... I don't want to call it corny because it's not corny. It's just so over the top. Yeah, it's just so over the top. I'm going to go on, Tim.
No, and that's right. And it even is starting out with that. But then I thought that they really brought it out. But I guess my only issue with it, it felt heated. It felt real. I felt like Bianca Belair came across like even more fired up, and you get to show a vicious, violent side to her that she hasn't necessarily shown as much. She's been more, you know, calm and cool and overpowering her opponents and all this. But here she really, you know, lets her hair down figuratively and gets in there and just scraps. My only issue with it is that this feels like rehash. This feels like the same fucking gimmick that they've done with Nikki Cross, I think, two or three other times already, where like to solidify another female wrestler, they have a wild and crazy brawl that ends up with, like, you know, DQ and all the refs and everyone coming out and doing all, and it feels, like I said, repetitive. Nikki Cross continuously is involved in these kind of angles. It keeps happening specifically just with her. And then when you add in the fact that her character is now not as serious, it misses the mark somewhat when it comes to like the ability to have that get over. That said, I think that Bianca Belair got the most out of it. Her performance was really well done. I really buy into her more now. She comes across more serious, like I said, as a scrapper, as a fighter, and not just a freak athlete. I think that moving forward, this can be good for Bianca Belair. But I think, again, this is wearing thin, repeatedly being the gimmick for Nikki Cross, as this is what she does. You know, I don't know how many times you can do the same thing in such rapid succession. I mean, she has not been in the company that long for me to say that I'm pretty sure she's done this angle at least three times now. You know what I mean? This exact same kind of setup.
Yeah, but when she's done the angle in the past, it's usually been over the title. Like her and Asuka had that wild brawl, or her and Shayna, again, was over the title. I'm happy that at least we're getting something with the women that don't involve the title. So we're getting something a little secondary that doesn't just involve the girls in the title hunt. And it's not, and at least something you can sink your teeth into, as opposed to a stupid Lacey Evans match or a match angle that goes nowhere. At least this thing has some teeth to it, you know?
Yeah. And that is a good way to put it. It definitely stands out because she's the only one doing stuff like this. But like I said, I feel like she's just doing it too much.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought this was like one of the worst NXT shows we've had in a while. We didn't get any matches that really sink your teeth into. None of the vignettes. I mean, honestly, besides the Undisputed Era vignette, nothing really stood out. I mean, yeah, Ricochet's promo was okay. I thought Sullivan looked like a star and actually looked like a seasoned professional. which is tough with seeing that. And normally he'd be guzzling the shit out of Raul Mendoza. I like seeing that layer. I don't know if it was the smartest thing for him, as we built him up as a monster, now to show a little vulnerability. I'm not sure on, but yeah. But overall, I thought this was like one of the worst NXTs we've seen in a while. What was your final thoughts on the show?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that this was a weak episode. I felt like a lot of that was due to the not really a lot of action that I could really sink my teeth into. It was too much vignettes and backstage stuff. So I think, yeah, just echo a lot of the same thoughts and opinions you had there. I mean, probably the best match on the whole thing was Raul Mendoza's squash match with Lars Sullivan, which is like, yeah. To me, that's not going to carry an entire episode of TV as your match. Like, and it's so funny with how much I've been gushing over the in-ring action in NXT recently that this episode sneaks by where nothing that it could really feel like hang its hat on. Good, I mean, that's a good match, but it doesn't feel like a real main event hang your hat on match for the show. And when you have the big angle that closes out with it kind of turning into just a wild schmoz non-finish kind of angle thing, it does hurt the quality of the entire episode as far as my opinion of it coming out of it. So yeah, weak episode of NXT, which has been rare lately. Even the down weeks, yeah, where they're not building to shows, have been pretty good lately. But this one was not. It did not deliver.
I'm with you completely. On that note, why don't we take a break and then we get to talk some action wrestling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaySpeedNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySpeedNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpeedNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're back with action wrestling for the armed forces. You can watch it on powerbombtv.com. This promotion is a promotion I'm really digging. I think it's one of the best new promotions out there. Where we're getting good wrestling, and they're not using the same old talent that you see in everywhere. They're developing their own talent, mixing with guys who have some reps and stuff, and the end results have been well booked, well organized, entertaining as fuck shows. What about you, Tim?
Oh, yeah. No, it's, I mean, night and day comparing this to MLW, right? I mean, yeah. This is a company where I'm seeing a lot of people. This is the best place to see them. Their presentation is amazing. The guys that Matt, you know, and, you know, we've talked about it. Matt is a guy that I think we both consider a friend or at least an acquaintance. But it's not just blowing smoke up his ass. The guy has got a fucking eye for talent. He picks the right people to focus on and the right people to give his backing to. One of which, who starts out the show, you know, he's not in the match, but he's out there. AC Mack is a huge boon for him because this is the most high profile place, I think, that you're seeing AC Mack get used.
And comes across as a star here, you know?
Comes across like a huge star for the company, and he comes across like he's an action guy, even though he's a heel, and part of his gimmick is like that he's even like against the company in some ways. He feels like a signature piece of talent for them, and he really delivers on this show in their main event with another guy who I give big credit to Matt for seeing through, a guy that me and Matt have actually, you know, talked about because we are in like a group chat thing where we're like two of the only people who really are behind Austin Theory, and in this setting, the guy delivers, and it just shows again that Matt gets it. Other places,
as a baby face.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, that was, we'll get into it when we talk about that match, but that's.
And I'm not a Theory guy, so yeah.
Yeah, but that's like the best way to present him that I've seen, and I think it works better. So it's just, I have to give a lot of credit to Matt, and I know that there's other people who go into working on the shows and helping put stuff together, but he's got all the right talent to where, yes, he's got
great, some people they probably have one of the best commentating groups out there.
Yes, I mean,
I really think Dylan has turned into one of the best out there, honestly, when it comes to telling us what the story of the match is, giving us background on all these wrestlers. I really don't think there's a better one out there. When we watch a lot of this indie wrestling, and some of the guys don't know shit, and Dylan's able to get over these guys so well because he's watched so much damn wrestling and watched a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, and he's got the relationships, and I have yet to see him do like one of the worst fucking sins to me. We talked about it before, is the people who are, when you talk about telling me the story of the match, they're not just telling me the story of the match that's supposed to be happening. They're telling me the story of the match that is happening, and I think he does a great job of that. I mean, if stuff doesn't go perfectly as planned, Dylan doesn't sacrifice his credibility to just trying to tell me what they want me to see or hear. He's actually giving me the story as it's happening, which is, I think, really important for the credibility of a commentator and for just the presentation of the show in general, that I buy into him with his credibility. And it's if he wasn't someone that we knew, you know, I think I'd still really appreciate what he's doing. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, you know.
For sure.
We open up with... I'm sorry, what now?
No, go ahead. That was it.
Okay. We open up with Slim J versus Ike Cross, and, you know, and Ike Cross, I thought looked great as a heel last show, and he's out with Cam Carter again, but off his SCI, I'm like, man, Ike Cross needs to be a babyface, and I think Matt's seen that too, because they look like they're trying to position Cross as a babyface, where here, even though he's still with Carter, it's definitely... The seeds are being planted, and right off the bat, the commentators are mentioning it too. So yeah, it's gonna happen sooner than later. Definitely the seeds are being planted here. I love Slim J playing to the kids. They start off the match, and AC Mack trips up Slim J to set up the heat. Easy spot. Basic spot, but I always mark out. I hate when heels start getting their heat by not cheating. I mean, it's so simplistic and easy to get heat, and he does immediately. Then you have Slim J when he makes his comeback, and he has the crowd with him, and it's pretty great. I dug Cross taking advantage of Slim J's missed moonsault. Ike's lawn dart was absolutely nasty. And then I love how AC Mack's interference fails. So, again, it plants some more seeds of dissent between the two guys. And they're kind of – they're, like, right now they're kind of, like, together, but they're not together because they're things are falling apart together. I think I would have liked to see some longer Heat and Shine segments for him. I felt it was a little too back and forth-ish, a little too your turn, my turn type thing. I think, he had clearly dynamics here. I think we could have been enjoyed a little bit more. He's on getting his heat, and we see Cam playing to the crowd more, playing up that strength, and Slim J working underneath he's a great baby face. He has a lot of cool offense stuff, so him having a longer shine segments as opposed to boom, boom, boom type thing, I think would have worked a little better, but still a hell of a match. I gave it 3 stars, a really strong opener. What was your thoughts on it, Tim?
Yeah, I echo a lot of the same opinions on it as you there. I think that one of my big issues with it coming, my biggest issue with the match probably is just the size differential not really feeling like it was there, feeling like almost completely negated.
It was almost ignored in a way.
Yeah, Slim J repeatedly going for the one-wing angel, just it looked foolish with the size of a cross on his shoulders, just did not look good. Unfortunately, so it's like, yeah, and the thing is, with watching Slim J recently a lot more, he's got other stuff that he can do for his finishes. I mean, he's ending matches in a lot of different ways, so the fact that he repeatedly was trying to go for that one-wing angel spot just, and like I said, it just didn't look good with a guy the size of Cross and his size comparatively. That kind of continuously took me out of the match somewhat, even though he did have to struggle to get it, which I think was, you know, the way that you would book that to make it make sense, as it takes him a lot to do it, but even still, it just did not look great. That said, yeah, I'm with you on pretty much everything else that you were saying there. I also gave it 3 stars. I thought that there was a little bit too much probably kind of your turn, my turn feeling to it. And it did feel...
Which actually, you already know where that actually does hurt the... it does negate the size difference, because if you add the size difference, the Heat would have made it much more compelling.
Right, and I think part of it too is, you talked about it, but the possible shifting of the alignment of Ike Cross, I can definitely see affecting your ability to work in a match setting like this, because Crosses could be self-conscious about the idea of working too heelish because he's trying to subtly turn babyface, and really they put most of the heat on AC Mack with, like you said, the cheating, and then also having the kind of the backfired cheating that infects the match as well. So I can definitely see a lot of credence to the idea that you got Cross going babyface at some point soon. And I think that, unfortunately, that could have hurt this match in some ways, because, yeah, I think that a more clear heel kind of advantage being taken by Cross with again, using his size, you having a solid heat segment like you're talking about could have made the match just a little bit better. That said, the match is still great. And talking about watching Slim J more around the horn a little bit, he's been really the star of this PWX Pure and having these really fantastic matches. And, most of those matches are with guys closer to his size, like I was saying. And I think that he was kind of trying to work a similar style here, that he's been doing that, but it doesn't work with the size of Cross, because Cross is just so much bigger than him.
Yeah, it's funny where Slim J, I always remember him from Wild Side. That's where I first saw him. And then, we saw him, and you see people see him in Ring of Honor. But where I got my re-education back to him was, and put Freddie Iha on the map, was their best of five series.
Yeah.
Just freaking tremendous wrestling. And I'm really jonesing on hoping we get a Freddie Iha, Slim J match coming up sooner than later. In action, because I think that's something that we all need to see on another stage. What do you think of Allen Angels versus Jane Bandy?
I really liked this. We talked about the size difference thing in the match before, but I thought that Allen Angels did fantastic here, playing the undersized heel. Really vicious stuff repeatedly. Loved the arm work. Bandy as kind of the people's champ, I thought was good. I do kind of question, talked about the great commentary, I do kind of question talking about Bandy, having this issue with Action because of not being on the poster and that gimmick. And again, I can't blame Dylan, because he talked about the credibility issue, and he's talking about something that's actually happening, which is that Bandy is working some kind of angle, I guess, on the internet, that he's upset that he doesn't end up on the posters. to me, that doesn't work for a guy like this who feels like a people's champ character. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong and other people don't see it the way I do. But to me, like, I'm okay with a people's champ character kind of coming across like saying, like, the company doesn't respect me as much as you guys, the fans, do. But to me, like, being worried about not being on the poster just feels a little bit too, like, kind of whiny and something that a heel would care about.
Yeah. Oh, so, for sure.
Yeah, so that didn't work for me. And commentary bringing it up just kind of hurts that part of his character. That said, his work was phenomenal. I thought Bandy did a good job selling the arm when he needed to, off of really nice work from Angels. But then also really having great fire-up spots, really dynamic offense that the crowd got super into. Just good work all around from both guys here. Really impressed with Angels, honestly. Which is funny because we've seen him a few times. He's shown up in Evolve. Really felt like nothing the times that I've seen him in the past, working, you know, the WWA 4 shows, and then also the times that he's gotten to show up in, like, some token spots for WWN showcases for WWA 4 stuff. Really never stood out to me. So when he was coming out here, I'm like, oh, this guy again, don't really care. But he delivered in this setting as a heel, on top, kind of, like I said, mixing in some high spots oriented stuff with also some good grounded arm work stuff. All in all, really great stuff. I gave it 3.25 star. Good action, good match, great story, but there's like a couple of little hiccups that kept it from, and it was also relatively quick, so, you know, it didn't get into like that top territory, but good action from both guys.
Yeah, I went 2.75, and I liked it too, and I liked it for a lot of what you said. I like Angels after the arm. I thought Bandy sold the arm really well, you know, and made the choice to sell it and show that there's consequences of getting his arm worked. So I liked that. It was a good meat and potatoes match where, you know, it was almost, you know, the easy story to follow. And I thought Angels set up for the Rings of Saturn was absolutely awesome, and a really, like, holy shit, that's awesome. Where it added a little bit of you know, for a basic bean and potato match, that the Rings of Saturn spot really had some flash and awe to it, and I like that. And you 2.75. The scramble match, you know, I thought it was fun. A lot of fun spots, big moves. I thought Flanco was amazing with his dives, and he seems like he's a dude who has a high upside, and I want to see more of him. But overall, just fun stuff out of the scramble. I didn't give it a rating because it was just, you know, a scramble in a way, but I really enjoyed it. What were your thoughts?
I gave it 2.75. I'm with you. Lots of fun, lots of good character work, cool spots, good action. Guys who definitely, it's nice to get a little peek of, and not just guys, I guess, wrestlers who it was nice to get a little peek of
there
in
you
this
go.
Setting without necessarily giving too much. And then I'd say that the top thing that closed out was that the only person who, I mean, I guess, you know, I talked about wrestlers, right? The big suplex stuff with Danny Jensen, I think that's her name, Danny Jordan, was cool little spots, but resoundingly, you come out of the match, and to me, the only person who stood out and that you remember and care about was Kevin Koo because of the big vicious finish, kicking Danny right in the back of the head, just stomping on two people, and then hitting this big kind of Dr. Bomb finish. Stomps off out of the ring looking aggressive and violent. And so, like, I think that's what you want. You want the ending of a match to feel like it matters, especially a scramble match like this. And it did. So it's a nice little sneak peek at some people that, like, you will maybe we'll get to see some more of in other settings. And they do have some promise. They could deliver in big settings, but you end up with it. Your focus is singular. You come out of the match and the story of the match is Kevin Koo kicked everyone's ass. You know what I mean? And that's, I think, the best way to get the most out of a scramble match like this.
Very true. Good point. What do you think of Dominic Greeny versus Kane Justice?
It's interesting the way that these two are kind of this dynamic that they're building. This match, it felt like it harkened back to the other matches while also feeling completely fresh and different in a lot of ways. They're in a setting where they don't have as much leeway, I think, to play around with the scenery as much. In the CWF, it really feels like, you know, when they started their kind of rivalry with each other, I guess you could say, or feud, it really felt like CWF arena, CWF crowd was a part of the story.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit, and the building even, a little bit less of that here. Honestly, a lot less of that here. This was more of a match, and less of like, kind of, I don't know how to put it, how to explain that really, like a set piece or just a dynamic kind of viewing into this other world, it felt like in CWF. That said, it also feels like repeatedly, I wouldn't say disappointing. In some ways, it's disappointing for me because of my personal taste that I want these guys to go out and just grapple fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I know what they can do, but they don't really do that. And I wrongly have the impression that that's what their rivalry is built on, but it's not. And it really never has been. And I think I'm not the only one who sees it that way in some regards, but they have like pro wrestling ass pro wrestling matches. They're not like shoot style or whatever, like I wish that they would be. But it's, they really pepper in some nice grappling, but the stuff that shines is like the big strike offs. These guys kind of throwing at each other huge, and the way that they back and forth and sell and just beat the crap out of each other while also mixing in some grappling here and there. The stuff that Kane does working like the toe into the ring post thing is always cool. He loves to do little stuff like that. That's always nice. The fact that, you know, Dom just has this incredible fire. When I talk about the strike exchanges, but Dom almost always wins the strike exchanges. And I love that because, that, again, that shows his fire, his toughness, his grit, his ability to work. And Kane repeatedly gets the better with, like I said, working the toe in the ring post and doing little underhanded stuff. And I just, it's a big part of why I love Kane Justice in general, is that he is a really great wrestler. His character as a fighter has credibility, but he is always willing to show ass. And I think that that's underrated. Some people take themselves too seriously.
Agreed.
And he takes himself seriously. And when I say takes themselves too seriously, it's like he doesn't, some people don't ever want to let their character be shown to be weak. And Kane allows himself to be the weaker of the two in some regards, because he's smart enough to know that that only heightens the stuff that he is stronger about. So showing that Dominic has that more fire and ability to beat him in strikeoffs almost every time doesn't make Kane look lesser than. It just shows that that's the strength of Dom. And then Kane turns around and his strength is, you know, he gets the sneaky roll up. He gets the smarter attacks. He takes the underhanded tactics, but he gets the win. And it's like, that's just part of his character. I love the way that Kane is willing to be a heel. He's a heel who shows ass and it makes his fucking matches. And I love that. I love these guys together. I gave this match 4 stars. I don't even know where I put it in the kind of pantheon of their matches against each other. I really probably want to go back and rewatch a lot of their other matches with each other just to kind of start to put into a frame of reference of what their rivalry is as like a kind of a bigger picture thing. But yeah, I'm really, really continuing to enjoy them together. And I mean, was this their third or their fourth match against each other? Do you remember? It's their third match against each other, and I still feel like they have a lot more to give.
Like, hell yeah, they do.
I can watch these guys wrestle a bunch more times, and I'm sure I'm going to continue to be satisfied by it.
Yeah, you liked it more than me, but I still liked it a lot. I give it 3 stars. Like, I loved Kane fucking with the kids early on. It reminds me of my friend when we go to the pool. I don't know what it was, but all these little kids would come up and just, like, pick on him. And this guy was, like, 18, 19, and these kids are like, 7 or 8. And that's kind of, like, the dynamic here. Like, these kids felt like they felt like in their mind they could probably beat the shit out of Kane. And they were giving him hell, and I love that. I think Dom wearing the MMA shirt, I think it helps a lot. It makes him... You know, I mean, not that I'm not, it's not a mean end of the body shaming thing, especially coming from me. But I mean, Dom doesn't have like that $1 million body, but he doesn't. But wearing the shirt, I think, makes him stand out a little bit more. It's more unique, and it hides some of the you know, like the body that you might think, well, he doesn't have the body of a star, but you know what? You don't need that. Especially when you're able to do something like wearing a shirt, I think it works much better than like Hero wearing a basketball jersey type thing, because it fits his character much better. I liked Dom defend. I liked Dom earlier, not just here, but he didn't do it here. Defend the bone. What is it? What's it called?
I think it was Bone Storm.
Bone Storm title.
Yeah.
I kind of dig how he was going all over the indies defending it, kind of like the NWA title. I think that's kind of cool. I loved when they did grapple like you. I was marking out big time. And again, you know, they're grappling. Kane decides to take a powder, and the kids just fucking hate him. I love Kane going after Dom's toes with the ring pose. Just a nice little trick. But God, Scott Steiner's screwdriver was wicked a nasty, and thank God they didn't let Kane kick out of that cleanly, because there's no fucking way Kane should have. That thing should be finisher, should be poison, should be Dom's finisher. That thing was absolutely nasty. What did you think of that thing, man?
Yeah, I thought that was brutal looking, and like, and
that looked like it should be. You look like it like knocked out Kane. Kane's cell job, it was great, because Kane sold it like he was fucking dropped on his noggin and didn't know where in the fuck he was.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people kind of have been using that move more and more, but his looked just brutal. It was fantastic. And the selling, I think the selling put it over the top, but there's something to everything Dom does when we talk about it. I mean, he has a ruggedness to him that all of his stuff, even like we talked about his pile drivers and stuff, like his stuff just always looks real snug and real brutal. So yeah, that added to it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's part of that Bruno Sammartino that I see in him type stuff. Then we get this Friday Daddy versus who in the hell do you wrestle?
What is this kid's name? Craven Cannon.
But either way, Friday Daddy goes over in a quickie.
Quick match.
Friday Daddy showed me some stuff here. What about you?
Yeah, Friday Daddy was good here, and it's funny because I've heard him and I've seen him very, very little, and I've never really thought much of him, but he was pretty good actually here. Had his wrestling boots on, I guess. But this match was so quick and just everything that was going about it. I just 2-star special for me.
Yeah, I didn't it was even a match. Rate it. It was just it was like a filler almost, you know, like hey, here's just 3 minutes, kids, go out there.
Which I mean, it made sense. It was kind of a buffer match, just because of the two big matches that it was in between. It made sense, and it's like it actually is a good use of that, which is something that I think. I kind of decry the concept of a buffer match a lot of times, but sometimes I guess you really do need one, and this is one of the times. But it's I like it better when it's used rarely, which they're kind of are doing here.
And then we got Eric Royal versus Yehi, and this is my favorite match of the night. Yehi's offense is like so unique. The big elbow was awesome. Love Royal, just all over the place, kicking ass, focusing on Yehi's arm. Working the crowd, the Aces Royal border, the Royals border toss of Yehi to the floor was freaking awesome. Where he just bounces to the outside. Royal is an ace at working the crowd, and he just shows it here. They modified the short arm clothesline by Royal, where Yehi is on his back. And Royal pretty much does lifts him up with a short arm scissors the short clothesline, and he lifts him up and just fucking nails him. It's freaking awesome. It's like doing a modified. It's like hitting the Rainmaker if Okada's on top and he like lifts Tanahashi off the ground and nails the Rainmaker from that position was freaking amazing. I thought Yehai's his freaking knees were really nasty here. The cravat knees were really nasty. Yehai's counter of the 3-point stance was beautiful, and then I loved Yehai's counter again. Royal went to the move that I was just talking about earlier, the Rainmaker short clothesline with his when Yehai is on his back, but this time Yehai learned from the first time and had it scouted out and countered it, and that led into the freaking finish, which was awesome. And then we get this great post-match angle between the two where Royal clearly turns heel. And by God, I can't wait for another match between these guys. Business is picked up. Given 4 stars, I thought this thing was tremendous. And that, and learning, and such a nuance and so subtle of Yehai eating that modified Rainmaker move into, and then being able to counter it later. I thought that was really, really great storytelling of a counter wrestler like Yehai and a mat worker of that stop, and being able to set him up and set Royal up and use his kind of his ego to blow up in his face. I love this stuff. What did you think of this match?
I also loved it. I gave it 4.25. I thought that something that that was great here, that it was a theme, has become a theme on this show, was the size differential worked into this match.
Yes.
Fred worked it like he was smaller than Royal. Royal worked it like he was bigger than Fred. And that was the whole opening of the match, that was kind of almost like Fred's shine opening of the match. But throughout it, he repeatedly was having issues dealing with overcoming the size of Royal, which I loved. And that he had to do things repeatedly, you know, the slamming the head into the apron on the outside. He had to do it a bunch, you know, because he's such a big guy. And even that still doesn't stagger Royal. Shoulder blocks, you know, Fred has to, he hits a shoulder block and Royal just kind of shrugs him off, so he has to get charging with that, you know, feet in the ropes attack, or not feet in the ropes, but has to get bouncing off the ropes and even diving with the shoulder block to take Royal down. That stuff, like I said, it's just that little bit that's showing the size difference. You know, a big forearm from Royal puts Fred down, while
was
Fred
that not a nasty forearm?
Yes, it was fucking beautiful, you know, and so Royal starts to go heel and then gets, you know, he just, both these guys are amazingly unique in their offense, and that's what makes this match so great. Both guys.
Yeah, how would you explain that move I was trying to describe, and I was doing such a bad, that's why I wouldn't be an announcer, because I couldn't do it to save my life.
I mean, you're right, it's a short arm clothesline. I mean, it's a short arm clothesline with the guy off the mat. It's like pulling the guy off the mat into a short arm clothesline. That's the only way to describe it. It's like, it's wild, man. He pulls the guy off his back up into a clothesline. It's just nasty.
It really wasn't. When you think about it, with physics, that should be much more vicious than the Rainmaker.
Yeah, right? Because, yeah, you're pulling the guy up. Gravity is going up and then back down again. So it's helping you on both sides of it there. When Royal just shoves Fred off into the ropes close, and then that's when he starts kind of focusing on the arm work there. I thought that was a great little spot. And then that's where Royal starts to feel like he's working heel for pretty much the rest of the match. After that, and you know, he's working the arm in the ropes. He's being super vicious. The shoulder, or the kind of, I guess, chest press, chest tackle that he does as the that he'll do to a guy on their knees, and Fred takes it, rolls it all the way into the post, was just a great spot. Super cool looking. I mean, yeah, these guys were phenomenal together. Post-match angle definitely leads to wanting to see a lot more. Agree with you that the finish was cool, especially kind of feeling like it had that playoff of something that already happened. I thought that the camera angle helped, because I think that the pin from another angle, you might have been able to see that probably Royal's shoulders were not on the mat, but the angle that they were at, you can't be for sure. So I think that that helped. You know, it's just the hard camera, but still, it's like it was that helped with the match. Great stuff. Both these guys phenomenal together. And like I said, both guys so unorthodox that when they meet up, you're seeing stuff that nobody else is doing, and it's not flips and dives and crazy. You know, this is Storm Cradle Driver or whatever that. It's like clotheslines, shoulder tackles, kicks, stomps, you know, the cravat knee, stuff that nobody else is doing, just like the way that they're doing it. It's the same moves, but it's the way that they do it that makes it stand
and when
out.
They're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another part of it. When they're doing it, the timing of it, the presentation of it, all of it.
Yep.
Really coming across like some high level work here. And then now having the match where it's not just teasing that Royal's a heel, but 100% Royal's a heel versus babyface, ass kicker, walking tall, grumpy vet Fred Yehi. Now that's a match I can get into. You know, that
and think about it. We'll talk about it in a sec. that, you know, next month, I mean October, where I'm making my action fan live viewing debut in audience, is that's when they open up the action tournament. For the heavyweight title, for the action title. I mean, you got to think Royal and Yehi got to be two favorites in this thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, guys, I would predict to make it to the finals, honestly.
Yeah, this easily could be the finals, you know?
Yeah.
You got to think of those two guys. You got to think of Cam Carter, name in the hat.
AC Mack.
You know, there's a lot of choices. Yeah, I meant AC Mack. I didn't mean Cam Carter. I mean, Cam Carter could, don't get me wrong. But I meant AC Mack, yeah. I think AC Mack, Yehi, and Royal are the big three. But Kane's on a roll right now. But you just never know, see what's going to happen. That leads us into the Lynch Mob versus Team Tag. This really wasn't this more of an angle than anything. And I felt, you know, if I kind of felt like the Lynch Mob was there, kind of just set up the big announcement that the Carnies are coming in October to get the revenge on Team Tag. This kind of really was just, you know, nothing really much. You know, just the Team Tag attacks early on, quick tags in and out by Team Tag. Totally bought into Matt Lynch's getting pinned early on, though. Total screwjob finishes, just put heat on Team Tag, and I like Matt being the authority figure with balls, and not being afraid to go and challenge and kick, suspend people or to not allow them to wrestle for the next week or set up the match. And here he sets up the match with the Carnies. It just almost felt like kind of the Lynch Mob is almost like an afterthought in here. This wasn't as great as the angle like last month's show or the last show they did. This is you know, progressing the story, and we get more of the Matt Griffin versus Team Tag Billy Buck. Of course, Billy Buck wasn't there, but you know, this is just progressing the story, and but it did feel a little like, kind of like, yeah, you know, why bring in the Lynch Mob for this spot? What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, very similar. I gave the match two and a quarter, and I bought into it, and I was with you in a lot of ways that it was good, but it did feel angle, and it felt like not the right place for the Lynch Mob. On top of, like, it felt weird to me, Matt. Lynch felt like he was mimicking kind of the recent kind of overness of Joey as the underdog babyface when he was doing the opening. And I've never really seen Matt Lynch work that way before. He came across like he was even more being like kind of subservient to just working a Joey Lynch style match, or at least like underdog babyface style getting beat up, which, I mean, works and is good, but it's just weird because he had his own personality where he was a lot, for me, in their tag matches, a lot more of the hard-hitting ass kicker and not necessarily the selling of the team. I mean, I don't know who else you put in there, and I don't know that the Lynch Mob really felt like they were hurt by this match, but I get what you're saying. It does in some ways feel like a waste of a you know talented tag team that could be put into something bigger. But I think that they did need to up the stakes with the team tag stuff, and having them go against a team that's, I think, a bigger deal in doing all this stuff did help, because I don't think that they could do this with just like a random team.
And it might have worked if they got a little longer time. I thought they were short shifted too, because I think the match only went like 6 minutes, right?
Yeah, and that's part of it too. So I could see both sides of it, and I like where the angle's going and stuff. It's hard to survive.
No, I love where the angle's going. Yeah, I have no problem with that, and I like the angle in general. I just felt, you know, yeah, the Lynch Mob were one of the better Southern tag teams out there. One of the better tag teams in the South. You think they'd get, you know, I thought they'd do a little longer and then get a little bit more shine. And then, like, you know, and then, like, Joey barely a blip. It was more about Matt Lynch in the match, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, not terrible, but it is hard to serve all masters. You want this to be an angle, but you don't want to, like, make it so obvious that you keep just doing angle. You want to have it kind of be a match. And it's tough to pull this stuff off perfectly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. What do you think of the main, brother?
I thought this was great.
Oh, yeah, but afterwards, Matt Griffin announces October 26th, and I will be there. First round matches for the Action title. I can't wait. And then we listen to the main event of AC Mack versus Austin Theory. Tell us about it, Tim.
Yeah, I thought this was great action here. Talked about it a little bit. We teased it to begin with, but Austin Theory. I'm an Austin Theory guy, and the reason why is that I think that this is where he belongs, a babyface. You know, getting to show off, getting to sell some really cool spots. Athletic as all fuck. Great look, great body. The guy has got everything to be a great babyface, and for some reason, Evolve Gabe has decided that he has to be pushed as his heel. And I think not even just that he's better as a babyface. He's better. He can be a good heel if it's like a match where he doesn't worry that much about being a heel, but in Evolve, it's like all about being a heel. It's all about the heat. It's all about, you know, cheating and bullshit and playing to the crowd and his character. And his character work is getting pretty good, honestly, in Evolve, but it's not what he's best at. He can be a heel in a match if it's a match like this, where even AC Mack as a heel was actually showing off. Like, Theory needs to get to show off his cool offense. He's got a lot of cool offense. He's got stuff the crowd wants to get into, and I understand that you don't want a heel to do that because they won't be a heel, but, like, again, that's just, like, kind of naturally, I think he's a better babyface. And so, like, you know, if you want him to be a heel, you got to still let him do some stuff. And unfortunately, Evolve kind of keeps him from doing that. That said, I mean, on top of that, you got AC Mack, who's able to be a heel who does do stuff. Like I was saying, AC Mack is not just like heat, but he's able to keep heat with the times that he does do that. Love the teasing of the cheating stuff where Ike Cross won't actually do anything cheating to interfere in the match outside the ring, which I thought was just great for telling the story that they continue to talk about, breaking these guys up. Loved Theory selling the knee. He was doing a good job selling early on in the match, but then once the knee gets dinged and then the knee is getting focused on,
did you feel the knee was focused on enough though?
Not by AC Mack. Unfortunately, yeah. AC Mack did not focus on the knee, but I thought that Theory did an amazing job focusing on selling the knee. And he
I totally agree there, but I was really disappointed that Mack almost did nothing to work the knee.
Yeah, but after that, I mean, yeah, I thought that Theory did a great job, but yeah, Mac could have sold the knee more, and I thought that Theory, though,
not Mac selling the knee, I mean Mac working the knee.
Yeah, that's what I'm Mac should have been working the knee more.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay,
that's what I meant. I must have misspoke, sorry. But I can't, I don't think you can argue that Theory didn't do a phenomenal job selling it. I mean, he
just, no, it was tremendous.
Yeah, and I thought that big time action. I thought that Mac, to me, up until this point, even though I consider him a star of action, he's felt like a star talker and not somebody that could be in a main event setting. I thought it was interesting to put him in this match as the main event. But I figured Theory, as I said, because I am a Theory guy, I thought that Theory could make it, they could have a good match. But I did not expect Mac to deliver as well as he did here. And he really came through as a wrestler too, not just the character on the mic guy. The match really delivered big. Really loved when Mac goes for the low blow roll up and he only gets two, and the desperation from him there, really, honestly, this is kind of bad because he's supposed to be a heel, really did kind of put some sympathy on Mac, even though he had just been cheating. You did kind of feel, at least I did kind of feel bad for the guy that, like, God, his best shot, low blow here, wasn't enough. What's this guy going to do? He's just getting outmatched. He's got an opponent who's got a bad knee. He's got his guy on the outside that should be helping him cheat who's not. You almost feel bad for him as the evil heel who just can't get... He's like the coyote almost in the Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
He's trying to kill the Roadrunner, but everything's going wrong for him to the point where you almost feel bad for him even though he's a murderer. But then, you know, the valiant babyface with the bad knee and the great body and all this, he's trying to just stand up and just, let's do this, let's have some honor, let's duke it out. And he takes one final fucking cheap shot, kicks the knee out of his leg, and gets the win there. And it's just, I thought that was great. Like I said, I gave it 3¾ star. I thought both guys were phenomenal here. I thought it told a really interesting multi-layered story. As I talk about the idea that you've got the heel, you almost feel bad for the heel because his second won't cheat for him in some ways. And it's like,
yeah, not only is it multi-layered, my friend, it also has like umbrella storytelling too, because you also have the Ike Max story going on at the same time. Theories having us telling a story with Mac, you know. So there's, it was almost like, you know, it was like it was connective tissue.
Yeah, and it runs through the entire promotion, like you talked about with the title tournament coming up. Now, I mean, I see Mac and Cross as contenders too. What are they going to do with each other when it comes to winning this title moving forward? You know, the tournament and the title. If they're not on the same page, then they're instantly, to me, competitors on the same level, you know. So yeah, that does, there is a lot to it that affects more than just this. You got Austin Theory, who now feels like a big time babyface for the company. The crowd was in love with the guy, and you know, he in some ways you feel like got cheated out of this match, and like, so you want to see him come back and be able to get right by the company moving forward. So yeah, I thought great stuff. And again, Mac keeps his heat, I think even builds his heat, but gets some sympathy, and again, to me, stands out now as someone who you could take seriously in the ring and not just a character heel, and a guy who can main event the shows and feel like a big deal in actual matches that deliver. So I thought that this match did a lot for everybody involved, honestly, and for the company as a whole.
I'm with you, brother. I give it 3.5. And I love when both roles are clearly defined here. Theory, your baby face. AC Max, your heel. Crowd's 100% behind Theory. And again, I like Dylan planting the seeds of AC versus Ike. Like the Ike Max story being a subplot in this match. Mac looks like he's working the neck. Theory dings his leg and just sells it so well and sells it so big. Like, you hit on all this stuff. It just gets better and builds and gets neater, and then the synergy of everything connecting here. I'm a sucker for umbrella storytelling, so when I get to see it here, it's just awesome. So this thing just touched so many different people. And it was just a great, great match on top. 3.5. And another, man, easy thumbs up show. I don't know. I think I liked the second show better because of the hot angle. But, man, this is a hell of a show. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, easy, great show. I can definitely see liking the show before this more. I think that if action had started earlier in the year or maybe ran a little bit more frequently, I think they're in my discussion for promotion of the year 2018.
Yeah.
I think they still are, but I think much stronger case if they had more shows to kind of hang your hat on. We'll see by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's almost like sample size in a way.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, they've delivered big time on every show. I'm never disappointed. No matches have really disappointed yet or anything like that. Angles are kept concise, but also feel like they have enough room to breathe and actually have some impact. So just good stuff all around. And we talked about it, but to me, I think I have to give a big thumbs up to a company where the people in the company feel like this is the best company. Like, this is where they're at their best. This is where they're getting to hang their hat with their best work. And I mean, there's a lot of guys who feel that way in action. And some of them you're not really seeing anywhere else, but other ones you are seeing them all over the place, or you're seeing them in some of the bigger indies in the world, and, or in America at least. And they feel like they're doing their best work, or being used best, being presented best here in action.
Exactly, man. Oh, wow. What a great show. What anything you want to plug, my friend?
So I got a very special podcast that should be coming out. I mentioned it earlier, but should be coming out over on PTBN feed, so it'll be separate from this. Maybe it'll come out on PWO too, but me and the guys from the old Burning Spirits podcast talking about the Nick Gage Invitational Tournament. I knew Pete wouldn't want to review it, so got some friends together to talk about some deathmatch. Pretty interesting, but it definitely goes off the rails. It definitely goes pretty long. That's how. New episode of Lucha Undead came out, and it was a surprise to me. I remembered recording it, but I forgot that it hadn't come out yet. So go check that out over on PTBN Pop. Go to Bola. I'll be going to Bola. I'll be checking that out. Probably talk about that somewhere, maybe even here next week, probably. Just follow me on Twitter.
I'm sure we'll talk about it for a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead, and that's all I got, Pete.
Yeah, man. Remember me on WorldCast Wednesdays, or me, Kelly, and Johnny talk World Class Championship Wrestling. We're following what's on the network. You can also follow me at Titans of Wrestling, and follow me on Twitter, and like the Pro Wrestling Only feed on Facebook, and all that stuff. Have a great week, and we will catch you later when you're watching some weekly wrestling. Bye-bye. Cause what you did, you know, was wrong. And all the nasty things you've done.